to come to a point in my ministry when I'm starting to want to revisit some of my favorite readings. So we have one today by Chris Milspaugh, who is a reporter for the Idaho Mountain Express. And this is about the Dalai Lama's visit to Ketchum, Idaho, where he went to dedicate a meditation garden and to give several talks. So here is the story, just as it appeared in the paper. And Rita Galani, one of our worship associates, gets to read the terrific reading.
The Dalai Lama arrived in the Wood River Valley and was swamped with things he had to do, from attending rallies, speaking at dinners, blessing events, and more. For security purposes, he used the same limo driver every day. One evening, at an important event in Sun Valley, he seized an opportunity to sneak away from the limelight room unnoticed. He walked out a side entrance and headed for the inn's parking lot, where he found his limo and his driver sitting in the back seat, drinking a beer and eating a sandwich, with his feet up on the seat. The driver scrambled, apologizing profusely, but the Dalai Lama told him to relax and stay put. He told his driver that he was tired of everything being done for him and that he never even got a chance to drive a car anymore. So His Holiness took off down the road, sideswiping a few cars and ending up in a ditch. A Sun Valley sheriff's car pulled up behind the limo, and the deputy carefully approached and knocked on the window. The Dalai Lama lowered the window and looked benignly out. The deputy surveyed the scene and ran back to his squad car and called the mayor. The deputy said, "Mayor, this is Deputy Sheriff Henderson. It seems that I'm just about to arrest the biggest VIP in the world, and I don't know what I should do." The mayor said, "Who is it? Is it Obama? I'll call the Secret Service and straighten the whole thing out." The deputy answered, "No, it's not Obama. I'm talking the biggest honcho alive." The mayor said, "Well, who do you have, the Secretary General of the United Nations?" "Bigger than him," said the deputy. "Well, damn it, Henderson," said the mayor, "who the hell are you about to arrest?" The deputy said, "I have no idea who he is, but he's sitting in the back seat drinking a beer and eating a sandwich, and the Dalai Lama is his driver."
I told you it's worth repeating. Our opening words for my sermons this year: have compassion for everyone you meet, even if they do not want it. What seems conceit or bad manners or cynicism is always a sign of things no ears have heard and no eyes have seen. You don't know what wars are going down where the spirit meets the bone. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. So will you come with me for our sermon this morning? We're going to sort of just get in a car together, and we're going to go on a journey, okay? Here's how it begins. "Hey, you!" He looked just like that, and he pointed at me. And this was a guy in a rumpled suit. And his tie was pulled down from the firm knot that it once was several hours earlier when he must have left the house that morning. And he had a walkie-talkie in his hand. "Who, me?" I said. "Yeah, you. You can't bring that sandwich in here. Throw it away or get in the back of the line." "But I just bought it and I can eat really, really fast," I say. "Why sell food if you can't take it in?" "Not my problem," he says. So I take a bite of the sandwich and I throw it in the trash. Never mind the sign next to the trash that said, conserve, recycle, share. But so far on our journey, the morning has been like that. It's full of ironies and full of contradictions. A little like you might feel if you engaged in some road rage in order to get here to church on time in the morning. Any confessions for anybody? 3 weeks prior to that morning, Karen texted me with the news, and I have tickets. To what? To a big deal event. Really? You got me tickets to Van Morrison? The Cardinal spring training? I'm so excited, I text back. No, even better. Better than Van Morrison? Better than the Cardinals? Who? The Lama. Who? I said it twice. Who? The Lama, the Dalai Lama. You know I shouldn't have to explain this to a minister, right? She says. And that was a very fair point. But do you know how you get one thing in mind that you get all excited about? And then you find out that that thing you got excited about isn't going to happen? And instead you're going to this other thing, which is great, but not nearly as great as the thing you got all excited about to begin with? Has that ever happened to you? That's how it was with me and the Dalai Lama that morning. I really wanted to go, but driving into MIT's small theater where His Holiness was going to speak that day, fighting traffic, delaying the sermon that I had to write, finding parking, walking between two factions of dueling Buddhists screaming and picketing at each other over who the true Dalai Lama is, buying and then throwing away my lunch, waiting in line to get frisked and then getting frisked, jostling with other acolytes, including, yes, Richard Gere, who is two people ahead of me, to get to the first-come, first-served seating, I couldn't help, my friends, but think I'd rather be singing Brown Eyed Girl than be where I was. Does this make me a terrible Unitarian Universalist minister? Has your, like, esteem of me, if it was here, is like, gone down now? Now, I've actually never been to see or been in the presence of a professional holy person. So once I was seated, I began to feel, you know, kind of curious. We were gathered there that day in a way that felt like a performance, like a show. And the crowd, they were buzzing, and people had their iPhones over their heads, and they were taking photos. The flashes were flashing, and everyone was hyped up on adrenaline. For someone who, at least I had heard and read, eschewed the limelight and the celebrity and the stage lights in favor of the quiet and the humble and the little ego. I'm wondering, watching the scene, is this what people say they are being spiritual and not religious? Does it look like we're all in the set together of American Idol? So right in front of me, as I'm being curious, there's a woman with her nose in her phone, and she's blocked off. She's on the front of the aisle, and she's blocked off all the seats next to her because she says she is allergic to anyone who wears perfume, which is fair. But it's how she talks to the people who come up asking her for a seat that bothers me. She doesn't even lift up her eyes from her phone as she says, "No seats here. I have allergies." She said it like 6 times. And the guy to my left has just hit me in the face with his long, flowing hipster scarf. And now there is a baby behind me. Who brings a baby to see the Dalai Lama? And it wasn't Carter, because this is before he was born. And the baby starts to cry the way that babies do. And my friends, I will admit it to you in case you're wondering. Yes, I was in a bad mood. just added to the list of ironies that morning. I was grumpy and frustrated and not very zen at all toward the people around me, including my spouse, who I am somehow so unfairly disappointed in because she didn't take me to a concert instead. Who's the jerk now? When all of a sudden, a voice in the note of D does this. And after she holds it, she asks the rest of us to join in, which is what I want us to do. You notice? And as we hear the note begins to press out to the walls and to the ceiling and to the floor, all other sounds. The baby, the woman in front of me, the protesters outside, the man in the tie barking into his walkie-talkie. So there's only this one note, this one sound. And no longer are we 300 voices. We are now one voice. And it was beautiful. And I'm thinking, as I heard that and as I felt the stillness in me, and I saw it in the room, and I felt it in the room, too bad, I'm thinking, that I can't put this note into a bottle and screw the lid on and then take it with me out into the world and releasing it almost like a weaponized sound of peace and healing. I take it with me into the school pickup line full of its sharp elbowed gossip. I take it into the kitchen of fighting spouses where kindness died on the floor years ago. I'd take it with me back home to St. Louis, and I'd put it, that note, behind the plates of armor of the Ferguson Police Department. I'd put it into the veins of patients receiving chemotherapy, including, most of all, our beloved Pat Manley and Sally Demler. And then I'd drive south down to DC and I'd open that bottle into the halls of Congress. And I'd see Ted Cruz singing the note of D with Elizabeth Warren. And I'd see Mitch Connell leaning in to harmonize with Dianne Feinstein. Wouldn't that be something? My friends, I wonder, what places would you release this note of peace and healing in your life? Where is the hurt in your life? Back to the theater. All of a sudden, to the left, there is a flutter of deep red robes. And suddenly, everyone who's still holding the note stands, and even the woman in front of me, she stands, she puts down her phone, and many around me, they put their hands together like this. And out toddles, because that's the best word that I could really use to describe him, his holiness toddles himself. And he's grinning from ear to ear as if somebody from his security detail just told him the best off-color joke ever. And he goes like this with his hands to all of us, and we all sit down. And the note of D dissipates in the room like a holy fog. And the Lama, he takes a seat in this big white easy chair, like he's about to watch the Patriots game, and he crosses his legs as he gets ready to share his big special wisdom with 300 people, special guests. And all of us are quiet now, like this room. We're waiting to hear his first words. Even the baby is waiting to hear. And do you know the first thing that he says? He says to no one in particular, "I need my hat. Where's my hat?" First thing. And from stage left, this guy runs out to him and rushes this hat up to him, and he plops it on his bald head, and he grins like this, just big grin, just like this. And it's not really a hat, it's like a golf visor. And he's got the capital letters HH for His Holiness emblazoned on the top. And the hipster says next to me, he's whispering beneath his big fluffy hipster beard, and he says, "One cool dude." My thoughts exactly. But why are we all here? Why did we go? It's a fair question. I mean, why does one go to see a professional holy person? To touch his robes? To get inspired? To tell our friends we were there? To hear something that wakes me up enough so that I won't get stuck up here in the harriedness of life, or get stuck down here in the hopelessness of life? To get the note of D to rise me up and lift me up, and the note of D to take me down? Is that why I'm there? Am I there to get a sermon idea? All the above. But then goes that sharp shrill, again, it was not Carter, of the baby behind me. And the noise, it's like a hot wind that blows out the last remaining piece of the D note. And the Lama, he looks over at me in my direction, because we're like 12 rows behind the stage. Uh-oh. And here he teaches me, because I'm ready to stand up and say, "Not my baby." But he just laughs, and he says in half English and then half through his translator, he says, and now just imagine the Dalai Lama speaking through me, if you would. "A cry like that reminds me," he says, "we live in such a tumultuous time." Yes? "We live in fear," he says. "War, climate, Ebola. We live in fear," he says. "So I wonder, how do we move with hope?" This guy's good. How fast he is on his feet. So can I just channel him for our benefit just for a second? He says, "I'm just a student." He says this to the crowd that moments ago was standing before him and bowing before him. He says, "I am just a student. I'm still learning. But here's what I think." He says, "I think regular people," and he lifts his hand up, his Lama hand, and he points over in my direction at the hipster, at the baby, at my wife, at me, at the woman in front of me, and he says, "I think regular people like you," he says, "make change. Human relationship is priority," he says. "We must make commitments to each other, because we won't make change by clicking," and then he leans to his translator. "By clicking," he says, "a mouse with computers. We make change by making commitments to relationship." And then he goes on, and then he's just getting warmed up in his red robes and his hat and his golf visor. He says, you know that institutions, my friends, depend on our cooperation, don't you? You know you can just say no. And here I found myself thinking of, I remember Occupy years ago and divestment from fossil fuels. And then he says, because the last century was a century of violence, this century should be a century of peace. And how do we get peace, he says? We get peace by dialogue. Because destroying the enemy, he says, is actually destroying yourself. And here I'm thinking with Veterans Day, not even a week old, of the veterans, my grandfather, who carried the wound with him forever. You know what we should want, he says? We should want, what should we want, Lama? We should want the life of a shoe. A shoe? A what? A shoe, he says, so that we can walk in each other's steps. People always say, he says, that I talk about compassion, and I do, but compassion without action, without serving someone or resisting something, you know what that is? He says, you know what that is? That is just feeling sorry for somebody. And the room is still. Who wants that? Who wants to be felt sorry for, he says? Not me. What I want you to know, he said, is the future starts right now. Hope isn't tomorrow. Change isn't next week. The human family isn't somewhere else besides this theater, he says. It's right there beside you, Nathan, the hipster. It's right there in front of you, Nathan, the allergic woman. It's right there behind you, Nathan, the crying baby. What you commit to and how you dialogue with these people, he says, is how you turn your hope into action. And I feel like he's just opened my head, and he's just sitting there like in this Buddhist posture, and he's calling me to task. Do you ever have moments like that? I hope you have some of them here. Sometimes I quote for us the Unitarian theologian James Luther Adams, who said of the church, of places like this, by the way, in a culture where people think that places like this are so old school and not really needed anymore, he said that church is the place that people go to practice how to become the people they wish they were. And I love that quote, and I love the word, most of all, practice, which implies that it takes so much work and screw-ups and attention and second and third and fourth chances, and even more than that, to be the people that we say we want to be. We need, said the Lama to me, more places where we can practice being a human family. And when he said that, what I thought of was every single one of you. And I thought of here. Who knew that the Dalai Lama could be such a promoter of First Parish in Sherbourne? The person to your left this morning, the person in front of you, the person behind you, the person next to you is where the change begins, which is both good news and it's hard news, because rarely do we know, as our quote says in the beginning, where and how the spirit meets the bone for each of us. We don't know the wars that are going on in this room below the surface. But the good news is that this is where we come to find out. That is what I hope. And that is what I ask of you, to come find out with me, with the person next to you. Can you do that with me? I'd love to hear a more resounding yes. Can you do that with me?
Yes.
Which is why we need that note of D to deepen us and lift us.